All right, we now move on to a discussion around proposals to intensify development intensity on the Kai Tak Peninsula. This was brought to the Kai Tak Task Force at its last meeting. Government, as you know, in general terms, wishes to is seeking to, because of challenges of land supply and housing affordability, is looking to increase housing supply in a major way, looking to increase on Kai Tak by something of the order of a third in terms of density and population. This obviously has major planning implications. The solution that we were presented with, or sorry, that Vincent's task force was presented with was, I think, far from exciting. And members commented that really we should and could do much better. This is such an important part of the landscape in terms of the harbour. We should be able to do better in terms of massing, in terms of design. And this, what we're going to see today, is the response from Planning Department and their teams on the alternatives that they believe are now available. I think they have responded, I understand they have responded quite positively to the comments and concerns that were expressed at that meeting. So, if we can, Tom, are you going to, Tom Yip from District Planning Office, are you going to lead this?
Don't worry.
Sorry.
I think Chair has given a very good briefing about the background of this particular proposal and the need of the community to make the best use of this large piece of land in the urban area. Let me take this opportunity to emphasize the importance that the government has been attached, has been given to the views of the Harbourfront Commission when it comes to the development of the various sites along the Harbourfront. I have been briefed by my colleagues about the alternative design proposals they are going to present to you. Let me assure you that we have a shared vision and the same commitment to protect the Harbourfront and to enhance the Harbourfront for the good of our community. And in the process, we have made our best sincere efforts and come up with a few alternatives. Chair, maybe I should turn to my team to invite them to give members a more detailed presentation.
Fine. Perhaps just before we do that, Vincent, sorry, this is really your purview, this is your area of responsibility. Anything you want to comment just before the team presents? Because I know you were equally unhappy last time.
I think Chairman, well, I would welcome the government to take into account the various comments made in protecting the harbor planning principle and guideline, and I understand that the team has go away without comment and come back with a proposal. And Originally, I would thought that proposal would come to the Kai Tak Task Force for clearance first. But I think, well, if this is coming right away to the commission, I have no objection. But I think the commission, who are not in the Kai Tak Task Force, may have missed the emphasis on our comment last time. So I would like the team to recap that for commission members' information. So I'll welcome the presentation, Chairman.
Thank you. All right.
Chairman, please do pardon us to bring in this directly to the commission. The only reason is that we want to try to fast-track the matter to be able to, if possible, publish the proposal in January. As you know, we spared no efforts in expediting land supply. And we do appreciate the views offered by the task force previously. As the presentation goes, you will notice that there are a few proposals. Some are more conservative, some are bolder, all seeking to address the earlier concern of the task force about how to make the best use of this piece of land, and at the same time, in terms of design, with a little more creativity. If I may turn it over to Tom.
Yes, Tom. Just to mention, Tom, that you have with you, I think, CEDD, Peter Shuey, your ACOM, your consultants with you, Vincent Howe Young and Simon Lee. I think Urbis Limited also with you. Peter, you may need to put a hand up in a minute. And Leon Orange, David Stanford is here, so we have a full team.
If I may say, David, unfortunately, is seriously ill today and cannot be here, so his colleagues are standing in for him. It's a great shame because he really wanted to come.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Peter, you are?
Yes, I do have a conflict of interest. We've been involved in this study.
Okay. So we call Peter's conflict, but please stay, Peter. Please stay. All right, Tom, off you go. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Kaitech has a long pending history, and after extensive public consultation and with public consensus, the pending theme of the Kaitech has been established as the Heritage, Green, Sports, and Tourism Hub of Hong Kong. And the outline zoning plan was approved in 2007. And based on the endorsed planning framework of the Kaitech development, various development has been complete in the area in the past few years, including the two public housing estate and some GIC use, like the fire stations, community hall, government office, and schools, as well as the cruise terminal and the open space. In view of the new circumstances and development opportunities, the government commenced a review of the development intensity and the land use proposal for Kaitech in 2014. And with regard to four major factors. Firstly, there is a persistent and acute demand of the community for housing land. And secondly, there is a discovery of heritage relics in the Toh Kwan Wan areas. And thirdly, government has a policy to turn the Kowloon East into the second CBD of Hong Kong. And lastly, there is continuous improvement in the water quality in the Kaitech approach channel and the Kwun Tong Typhoon Shelter. We have completed the review, and the review will focus on several areas of Kaitech development without compromising the original planning concept. For the Area 2, which is close to the current city and Toh Kwan Wan area, there is a proposal to develop a heritage park to conserve the discovered heritage villas, and also we propose to relax the domestic park ratio for this area to 6.5, which is the maximum permit for the new development area under the Hong Kong Planning Standard and Guidelines. And for the Area 3, we propose to rezone some sites which have no identified use for commercial and residential uses. And for the Area 4, on the OZP, there are two rows of development sites, about six hotel sites funding the Victoria Harbour and six residential sites facing the Kaitech Approach Channel. And we propose to rezone the residential site in the south to hotel use, so that we can form a hotel cluster closer to the cruise terminal and the proposed tourism node for greater synergy effect. And in return, we propose to rezone three hotel sites in the north for residential development, so as to meet the acute demand for the housing land. Also, as there is no longer a need to provide an opening under the proposed metro part, we see there is an opportunity to slightly extend the residential neighborhood to the north to provide two additional residential sites. So in total, there will be 10 residential sites and 4 hotel sites in the runway area. And the domestic park ratio for the residential site will be also increased to 6.5 in accordance with the Hong Kong Planning Standard and Guideline. We briefed the task force in November and the task force expressed reservation of the proposals in the former, particularly on the former runway area, and stressed the importance of complying with the harbor planning guide principles and guidelines, and request the case, the refined schemes to be presented to the Harbor Fund Commission for further considerations. The task force, the concerns of the task force are on several aspects. Firstly, while they agree that there is a need to increase the housing land supply, they consider that the proposed extent of increase in development intensity may impose adverse environmental, traffic, and visual impacts. And also, the proposal will result in bulky and impermeable cluster of building along the runway area with little height difference. Also, according to the harbor planning principle and guidelines, developments directly fronting the harbor should adopt a lower development intensity, and the building height should be descending towards the waterfront to allow greater visual permeability. Also, there should be a variation in building height profile to help achieve a dynamic skyline and a distinctive identity for character development. Lastly, the environmental and traffic mitigation measures should be in place to ensure livability and connectivity of Qatar development. So, after hearing the views of the task force, we have studied and come up with some revised scheme to address four major concerns. Firstly, we aim to address the concerns raised by the task force and try to provide a building profile with varied and interesting profile and better visual permeability. And also, the proposal should adhere to the harbor planning principle and guidelines and the urban design guideline under the Hong Kong planning standard and guideline and the original planning concept of the OCP. So, let me highlight some important harbor planning principle and guideline which you are all aware. Like, we should adopt a lower development intensity along the harbor, and there should be a building height descending towards the harbor to increase the permeability to the water body, and also diversity in building mass and varying building heights should be encouraged, and we should be careful with the very tall building along the harbor front. For the urban design guideline, one of the most important principles is to preserve a 20% building free zones below the reach line of line road when viewing from the key popular vantage points. So the planning department and the CEDD have conducted a preliminary urban design study with the assistance of architectural service department and consultants and come up with some refined scheme. And then I will pass it to the Alan to explain in detail about the different options. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just want to run through the urban design approach that we've adopted, and then Leon Orange will then come on and explain the architectural approach and the various schemes that we've generated architecturally on the basis of urban design and planning principles that we've established since the meeting with Vincent's team. We'll then do an overall summary, and then Plan D will conclude the overall presentation. Clearly, what we were tasked with right at the beginning for the previous base scheme was to undertake a scheme that was based on higher plot ratios, but with no relaxation at all of other parameters. And that's why we probably generated the comments we did, which were quite negative, and justifiably so in that regard. I will say today we're only dealing with the runway precinct. We've been working flat out since we met with Vincent's team to resolve a lot of the key issues along the runway, which I think was the key focal point. We won't be addressing the tourism node, nor the areas around the cruise terminal. So I just want to make that one clear. So in terms of overall running order, what we'll start with is the site context and the runway precinct planning controls as they were imposed upon us. Your major comments, and I copiously wrote them all down last time we came here, I'll outline the base scheme, and then we'll go into the new schemes from an urban design perspective, and then Leon Orange who've been working with us very closely, and ESD, will then come on to the architectural approach. Clearly, this is a very important site. You've got to get it right, and that's really, really important. I think this slide shows it all. The previous slides were dealing with the context, the very local context of the runway precinct. This is a very important area that will be seen right across the harbour and from various other vantage points. Essentially, it has two sides. It has a harbour side, and then it has a city side, the northern side being the latter. So we really have to get the massing right and the variety of development within the site completely correct. So it's a very, very challenging aspect, particularly with the plot ratio and the GFA that we have. Now, we also have a set of planning controls, which are in themselves quite onerous. The average depth of the site, excluding non-build areas, etc., on the northern side is around about 50 meters in depth. You can see in the slide what the depths are typically. On the southern side, we have a bit more on average. We've got about 70 meters in depth. The non-building areas are simply there to accommodate a whole series of infrastructural provisions and also buffer strips adjacent to the road D3, which is the central road spine that dissects the overall runway area. We have to take into account, obviously, the context of the Metro Park and also the tourism node, which we have done, and the developments that ensue there. Plus, we have to take into account, as was said at the previous working group meeting, what's going to happen on the promenade. What are the key aspects are going to actually happen on the promenade? So we've looked at the sort of parameters that could be applied to the development of the promenade areas. Now, as has just been mentioned, we've taken into account clearly all the parameters in the key guiding documents. They're vital to have in our minds when we're doing this, and particularly, of course, your own harbourfront enhancement proposals. Taking just basically the key comments, and there were a lot more, and we have borne these in mind. The concerns were quality, character, and an innovative approach to design, and that's very, very important. But bear in mind, it's a very challenging exercise with a lot of GFA to play with on quite a small site. But there are land restrictions, as was said right at the outset, which we have to respond to. It will have to be a landmark. It's right in the middle of the harbour. That's really, really important. And it should try to have a unique, distinctive character insofar as the configuration of the sites will allow it. There has to be, and this was a concern that was expressed by several members, a public-private interface and activation. That the area has to be activated, and you have to have nodal points and so on. I'll try to show some of the approaches. These are not exhaustive, and we have more work to do after this meeting. Height control, well, the last scheme was pretty flat-topped, and I think that was the reason why people said it was monotonous. So in that regard, we tried to look at the variation in height as a parameter to make the development much more exciting. And on the basis of these concerns that you've had, we've set out a series of urban design principles to try and circumscribe a development that will be more acceptable to you. And of these, there will in fact be three options. Now this is the base scheme, fairly flat-topped overall, fairly intense. You see the hotels on the right had a very high site coverage, which make the bulk of the building really is quite significant, and it's very difficult without a relaxation in height to do very much with that, because reducing the site coverage and having a greater height can give you much more in the way of permeability and visual variety, and this is what we've adopted. One thing a good hint that was placed by you, Mr. Chairman, and Paul, was that we should not be constrained too much by the height, but bearing in mind the principles that Plan D has just outlined in terms of not exceeding the 20% backdrop of the ridgeline. So the guiding principles that we've adopted and derived in conjunction with coming up with a new scheme, which Lee and Orange has developed, is to have a sensitive disposition and massing of development, to get the permeability right so you get better air ventilation, get great physical interlinkage and connectivity. That will get people to the area, it will make it an interesting place to be, and ensure integrated planning for a vibrant harbour. So the key moves that we've introduced in this respect are varied height profiles, a mix of building typologies, which we've indeed included. We've achieved the visual permeability in a much better way than the previous base scheme. And we've examined how we might create nodal points and gateways within the overall development. So just to share you with some of these aspects, looking at the landscape aspects, what we would do is create key nodal points along the whole runway precinct so that it is an interesting and varied place to go to. There will be circulation spaces, there will be areas along the runway where there will be particular events occurring. It'll be activated by a retail edge, which will be emphasized at particular areas, and there will be great permeability through the whole area. Of course, major circulation doesn't just occur along the promenade. What you have is circulation also along a landscape deck, which will be developed and will be soon developed along the extent of Road D3. So that's important to remember. I think what we've also achieved is better visibility from the D3 deck through the development out towards sea and also the Kai Tak approach channel. So looking at the at-grade pedestrian connections, this shows you what connections can be achieved. I think principally you'd be looking at obviously at-grade connections right along the promenade and then out with along road D4 towards the hinterland and then D3 as it goes towards the stadium and the metro park. In terms of nodal points that I've just referred to, we've identified a cluster of gateways, activity nodes, and active frontages scattered along the waterfront, not just arbitrarily, but obviously at gaps that were meaningful to create clusters and nodes to which you would go to along the edges. And I just want to illustrate some of these in a minute. The main ventilation corridors will clearly follow the gaps within the buildings and circulation corridors themselves. And what we've adopted as a principle is a mixture of low blocks and high blocks to create visual variety and also to enhance ventilation within the overall scheme. And you'll see when the architectural team presents their principles that you are getting a juxtaposition of high blocks and low blocks, which certainly makes quite a difference in terms of the overall layout. The other factors that we're looking at, and I'm sorry, the image at the top has slipped. We thought we'd sorted that. But what we're looking at is a series of point towers that can create visual variety and juxtapositions like you're seeing on certainly the top slides, the top images on this slide. So we also, by doing that, enhance the amount of open space and permeability. Several people commented at the last meeting that we perhaps didn't have enough circulation and open space provision. So we've certainly addressed that. And again, as I say, we are trying to have a more dynamic skyline and greater porosity. I think the good thing about using low buildings is that you get not just a reduction of the wall effect, but you also get buildings coming down to the human scale, which in a development like this, at the sort of densities that we're dealing with, you really have to achieve, because otherwise the whole thing becomes pretty daunting. So we have lower graduated development towards the waterfront, which I think is a very, very important thing to achieve. And so you get a situation like this, where we have these retail edges at key nodes, activating the waterfront, providing destination spaces for people to go to, not just the residents, but also visitors. And so what we've tried also to do in the new scheme is to have greater and enhanced landscape amenity as well. It's not just commercializing it, but also creating destination spaces that people can go without having to go to a bar or a cafe to drink. Now, I just want to show you some of the key nodes. I say this is not exhaustive, but I just want to show you some of the experiences that you might encounter as you go along through the waterfront when you're coming in at the gateways and as you circulate around the waterfront promenade. So if you're coming in from road D3, you'll see D3 is emerging in tunnel there. The Kai Tak approach channel is in the top end of this sketch. And you'll see that in this particular instance, the deck extends seamlessly from the metro park right across to the city side waterfront promenade. So you're getting a great large landscape space there that can host a lot of various activities. And within the core of the development area, we have a low-rise retail scheme which can actually act as an activating space for the Metro Park. Concerns were expressed at the last meeting that there was no activation of the Metro Park. Now, we're not doing a design of the Metro Park here, but there will be other features, obviously, within the Metro Park, and that's been looked at separately by other government departments. But we are looking at the edge of the park here, and to facilitate this, what we've done is we've removed some infrastructure that we thought did not achieve what we try to achieve here. So we've got rid of a pumping station, for example, that's located out with this particular area, and it creates a marvellous opportunity to create a real destination entry into the overall development. As for D4, which is the entry from East Kowloon, you come through this gateway structure, you'll see the landscape deck which extends over to D3. There will be two low-rise landmark buildings at the entrance to this, so that creates a feature entrance as you're coming into the overall development. This area has seen vast improvements to the water quality within the Kai Tak approach channel. I hope that one day we can see lots of these dragon boat races and certainly other races going on within the Kai Tak approach channel, which in itself, by bringing people to this particular edge, will help to activate the waterfront and provide visual interest. Now you would look at just the promenade areas. We're looking at various activity nodes, we're looking at lookout points, we've got retail points activating the waterfront, creating a great destination space. Clearly we can develop this further, but I'm just trying to give you a sense of what we're trying to achieve and the character of the areas that we're trying to generate. Right, so much for the urban design principles and landscape approaches that we've attempted to adopt. We've dealt with the base scheme. I've gone through the new scheme principles and the urban design principles that we try to adopt. I'd like to invite Leon Orange just to go through the architectural proposals.
Thank you. Leon Orange, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. So this is the base scheme that you just seen, also presented last time. We agree that there are lots of areas of improvement in this base scheme, particularly about the density of the buildings, also the permeability issues, and as well as the monotony of the skyline. As you can see in the aerial view, also the U-shaped building blocks are creating some problems in terms of like overlooking the views and also in terms of getting natural lighting and ventilation for some of the units. So we did a few improved schemes, and scheme 1A is by adjusting the building heights in order to free up space in between the buildings so as to achieve a more permeable planning. And how we going to achieve this is by allocating site C3 from previously a commercial site to a residential site this time, so as to give more room to play with for the residential areas. And also, we are slightly making the buildings higher to 120 MPD, but creating a more dynamic skyline by doing a stepping effect. So as you can see in the elevation, the middle part, the buildings are higher, so the highest point is 120 MPD, and gradually stepping down towards the two ends. And in terms of planning and positioning of the towers, we are adopting a point tower this time instead of the U-shaped tower block last time, and also creating rows of layerings. As you can see in the plan, we are doing two rows on each side of the site, and the buildings are also staggered in between, so to create some visual corridors and also wind corridors, so as to free up more space. And the yellow ones are the low-rise residential blocks. And along the waterfront promenade, which is site E2, A2, C1, and C2, the ground floor space for the low-rise block will be used as a commercial retail or alfresco dining, so as to activate the promenade area. And on the right-hand side, there are three sites which are used as a commercial sites, which is site B5, C5 and C4. And it will be used as a hotel, offices, and commercial. These buildings are now at building heights of 74 to 120 MPD. So as you can see in this aerial photo, the stepping effect of the buildings are making the scheme more enriched, and also the overall master plan is responding to the overall geometry of the site, emphasizing on the central axis, also creating two layers, the front row and the inner row. All these residential building blocks will have views out to the city or to the harbor because they're staggered and not just being placed parallel to each other. So this view is taken from the Quarry Bay vantage point, key vantage point area. So you can see all these building heights, although we try to increase the building heights, but they're still within the yellow line limitation, which is the 20% of the building free zone. So a close up of the skyline of the building. So the skyline is basically following what's behind, which is the natural landscape of the ridge line, the middle part being slightly higher than the two ends. So Scheme 1B is very much similar to Scheme 1A. The commercial sites at the on the right-hand side, which is B5, C5, and C4, are exactly the same as Scheme 1A. And what we have done in this 1B scheme is we try to enhance the dynamic skyline by enlarging the range of the building heights. So the residential blocks are ranging from 79 to 120 MPD, whereas the previous scheme is ranging from 92 to 120. So you can see the stepping effect are more prominent in this scheme, but the drawback is some of the building blocks will get longer and the footprint will get bigger. So there would be some overlapping in terms of the planning, but still we are able to achieve the minimum natural lighting and ventilation requirements. So it's the view from Quarry Bay Park. All these buildings are still within the yellow line limitation. For Scheme 2, we are trying on a different direction by treating the commercial plots and the residential plots differently. We are trying to make a more distinct appearance for these two areas. So you can notice that in the commercial plots, the plot ratio are come up to PR10, and also we are allocating one more site to residential. That's the C4 sites, which was commercial in the previous two schemes. Now it's shown as residential. And the benefit is we can further lower the building heights for the residential, but still maintain the stepping effect and responding to the ridge line for the residential part. For the commercial part, since we are reducing the number of plots to only two plots, in order to keep with the GFA, the building will get higher. So the highest building would be up to 179 MPD. Whereas the rest of the commercial would be around 110 MPD. So you can see in this aerial photo, the commercial plot would be more highlighted from the rest of the area. So yeah, this is the viewpoint from the Quarry Bay Park. So one of the buildings in the commercial plot would be treated more as like an iconic building, which will go beyond the yellow line limitation. Whereas for the residential buildings, it will be way under. Zoom in. So this scheme is more about treating commercial and residential separately. So here is a summary of all the schemes together with the base scheme that was presented last time for easy comparison. So as you, maybe I can go through the brief is a briefly is about the building heights, in the base scheme last time is from 75 to 90 for the residential. For scheme 1A is ranging from 92 to 120, whereas in scheme 1B is has a larger range from 79 to 120. For scheme 2, the residential will be a little bit lower from 76 to 108. Whereas for commercial, scheme 1A and B would be exactly the same. So the commercial blocks are still within 120 MPD, but for scheme 2, it's getting higher up to 179 MPD. Just a summary about for all the elevations of all the schemes and also comparison about the viewpoints. So maybe I'll pass to you.
Mr. Chairman, if I go back, we just had a request to go back to one of the particular slides, which, there we go. You might have noticed this slip by. I'm sorry, my colleague from Leon Orange didn't know about this one. we just slipped this in to catch her out. With the tall tower scheme that we've got on this particular scheme, scheme two, for the commercial sites, you've obviously got a significant building bulk. But current proposals are underway looking at a 200-metre high tower in the tourism node. So if you look at that, you get this juxtaposition of high buildings. Now, you might consider that has merits. And on the other hand, you may consider that the breaking of the ridgeline by the towers on the commercial sites within the runway precinct are not acceptable. But there, I think we have to inform you of this juxtaposition that is being examined at the moment. It may not, you may not accept this particular scheme, but at the same time, the 200-metre tower is under examination at the present time. So if I can just go on to maybe just give a quick summary, and I'll hand back to Tom. So I think our general feeling is that Scheme 2 probably has too much bulk associated with the commercial development, which probably overpowers the residential development. But bear in mind what I've just shown you in terms of the 200-metre tower that's currently been examined in the tourism node. This is not under our purview, by the way. So on balance, we are looking at either Scheme 1A or 1B. As was mentioned by Leon Orange, 1A is slightly more permeable, and there's no overlapping of blocks as you get with Scheme 1B. What we have achieved by the juxtaposition of high and low rise buildings, plus, most importantly, relaxing the height, is a positive height to density ratio, which we did not have before on the previous scheme. And this is the result of really loosening up the developments, providing much more permeability and a much more human type of development. We also get a more varied height profile, which I think is really important, which we didn't have before. And we are able to activate the waterfront and all of the schemes by the various components that we've now installed into the overall scheme. So I think we've got a better story to tell with these schemes that we've shown you. And I think they're meeting certainly your harbour planning principles and certainly addressing a lot of the comments that were made at the last meeting. Thanks. I'll just hand over to Tom now.
Thank you. Just a short conclusions. Actually, we do think that as compared with the baseline scheme, all these schemes are better in terms of interesting and variable form and building high profile with better visual permeability. And after taking a balanced consideration of factors, including the original planning concept of the OCP, the Harbour Planning Guideline, and Urban Design Guideline, we do think that Scheme 1A or 1B is generally recommended. And subject to the Commission's views, this scheme will be further refined for further consideration by the Town Planning Board. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Tom and team. Obviously, a lot of hard work's gone in. Thank you. We appreciate that. Just an immediate question from me. Have you really pushed the height issue to its full? You talk about not breaching the ridgeline, but you seem to be 20 metres and even more below the ridgeline in terms of the height of your towers. Is there a possibility of having more height and therefore reducing the number of towers, the bulk of the buildings, more open space? Perhaps you could address that in the combined response you give us in a minute. But I personally, I would have liked to see you push the height issue even harder. But members, members, comments, reaction? Please, Becky. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I have 3 points. I just try to be quick. On the first point, I want to flag a potential pitfall, especially in our right at the beginning in paragraph 4, saying that planning is an ongoing process. This public engagement has been since 2004, more than 10 years. The Hong Kong International Airport relocated is already building the third runway system. So I think the society now really want this piece of land to be used in a way for Hong Kong people that can generate real benefits that people and the public can enjoy along the harbourfront. So I think this is quite important. This is my first point. On the second point, I think even though we have a lot of aspirations and so on, we do have an obligation for our future generations. So I do respect the need for more residential units instead of just insisting on a nice area of low-density residential area. But I think we have to work on this compensation principle. You know, with this increase in density, what are the additional public benefits, especially in comparison with the previous one? Are we having a wider promenade? Are we having more interesting and attractive space, you know, public space like parklet? And I think especially for Scheme 2, we can do something interesting on the commercial tower. So I think that would be quite a potential for us to work on, the second point. The last point is really on transportation. I think how can we make use of this Kai Tak area to better improve and to provide a better pedestrian environment? I know that we are developing this landscape depth, but I want to make sure that we don't drive all the pedestrians up there. We want to make sure that pedestrians, you know, can have easy crossing at grade. I know in the presentation that it has been mentioned that it can be done, but I hope that it will be enforced, because it will be no use that this could be some at grade crossing, but it is a 70 kilometer meters of road, and then it's too dangerous to cross, and eventually you have to rely on the footbridge. So on that, I also hope that we would have more access point to the deck all along. And finally, I want to clarify, in one of the slides, I see that all the car parks are on the underground. Am I correct that this is also the case? Yeah, thank you, Chair.
Sorry. Could there just be another question from me? How do we weave our environmentally friendly transport system through this particular development? I mean, there's talk of an elevated structure, monorail, not shown on your plan. How is it going to be weaved into what you're suggesting? Just perhaps you could pick
Can
that
I just
up.
Answer that one right now,
no.
so we're quite clear about it? There is provision within the contract that's been let for the deck over Road D3 for the accommodation of an environmentally friendly transport system. But the key issue related to your question is we don't know what that system is right now, so we've got no real depiction of what's there. There has been conceptual planning done for particular station positions and so on, but this is by no means definite at this stage.
Okay, all right, thank you. Thank you. Members, observations, comments, please. Ivan, and then Paul. Yep.
Thank you, Chairman. Some very fantastic piece of presentation, given the very short time between the first presentation and now. So it's amazing, impressive efficiency. And I also appreciate a lot that show a very good collaboration between planners, architects, and urban designers to come up with a much more sophisticated and mature proposal. Second point I want to make is, yes, we all understand we need to preserve our ridge line, but at the same time, from urban design point of view, we also have to take care of our skyline of our city. So apart from landscape, we also need to take care of our townscape, our streetscape. So I don't see any rationale, you know, sort of tighten up ourselves strictly to adhere to the ridge line and then kill our streetscape, townscape, or our skyline. So there is something we need to be sort of taking a balance. The third point I want to make is, you know, because it is a, you know, first time I saw this improved scheme, it's been touched a lot on the permeability, improved permeability, and also proposing no block, high block. But with what I've just seen from the layout, actually I'm not quite sure whether the AVA, the natural ventilation at the low zone, does it work, you know, according to the current standard. You know, with my experience, every time we make submission to Section 16 application with this requirement from the EPD colleague. So that's a question mark. You know, with all this low block, actually, when you color all this low block, high block, you know, making a preliminary assessment on the natural ventilation on the low zone, I'm not quite sure.
Thank you.
The fourth point I want to make is about I still will expect to see much more in-depth proposal on how we're going to handle the public open space at grade, in particular facing the harbor. It still looks like to me it's a bit boring, you know, very sort of a straight-lined approach. Whether or not it will be possible in the planning stage to enable some more variety pocket space all along our waterfront. And the last point is, again, I've been making a very strong objection last time about the assumption that we change the hotel site to residential site, how we're going to handle the noise. And the answer we got last time is it can be handled through what we call the acoustic window and acoustic balcony. And that, you know, has not been addressed in this presentation, because the acoustic window and acoustic balcony actually is the last resort or the last solution we should actually avoid. Because in one of the seminars we jointly conducted with the building department, EPD, our architectural fellow show a picture of a master bedroom in order to achieve this acoustic window requirement. The vertical window mounting in one single window of a master bedroom is talking about 26 mounting. So you just like living in a prison. So, you know, how we can justify paying $10 million to buy a property, and then you find out, you know, every day you sleep in a room looking out from the window like living in a prison. So I will really appreciate if that that can be taken care at the planning stage. And thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Paul, please.
I'd like to understand from the team which scheme performs better at ground level. Me as a person walking at the ground, which one performs better? I have a hard time understanding the drawings to understand where I can walk, where I cannot walk, where I can sit, where I can't sit. It appears to me that some of these you can actually walk through the buildings, but I can't tell which. There's that more. Maybe you could spend a bit of time to explain that a bit better. Just a very minor detail. I see trees in planters, but I see no shade on the pavement. I'm not sure why we have to burn ourselves walking along the waterfront and have the trees standing in the planters shading the grass instead of the trees shading the people and let us sit in the grass. So I just don't understand that aspect of the drawing. But that's a minor detail. We're going to have the deck level at the back of the buildings. Are we going to somehow feature into the design or in the details somehow how the deck level and the balconies are going to work together? Do I walk from the deck onto the podium of the building to the front and sit on the balcony and walk back to the deck? I mean, is this going to be, is there a design, are we going to set an MPD, are we going to set a height where we're going to connect all of this and make it work so that if I'm at a walking on the footbridge over the road, I can walk into the buildings to the waterfront and walk back, or I can roll on my wheelchair without having to lift the wheels by the time this building is finished. But you know where I'm coming from. So it would be nice that the design, the details that are going to be coming out of this work both at ground level and at deck level. and it would make it, I think, quite interesting if that can be done. I don't know how the your activation of the waterfront is going to translate into the outline zoning plan that's going to be approved by the town planning board. Or maybe you could detail that a bit further. I remember last time we asked for commercial and retail at the ground level, and it was left by the town planning board as an option rather than as a definitive. And I think it has to be definitive before it is not just an option. Chairman, that's the area that's been presented to us today. I have raised in the previous meeting in the CARDEC task force my concern about a lack of detailing on some areas that we have discussed in the last few years several times in the task force, and I don't see that translated in the work. So the government goes back to the town planning board with great detail, but I don't see it. The head of the approach channel, both Marina Bay and Darling Harbour have a fantastic head of a water body where people can see each other at both sides of the water. The opportunity is at the head of the approach channel, and we had a competition for the Kaitek River, a lot of these creative proposals had some interesting treatment of the head of the approach channel. All of it would involve to make sure that there is some GFA there on both sides or three sides of that water body, where people can walk back and forth and can drink a beer, and you can see your friends across the water, you can see the lights at the other side. Looking at your plan, I don't see people, I don't see lights, I don't see any activity, I just see a dead space there. There's nothing. I had hoped that, I know you worked very hard and maybe had no time to work on this, or maybe it was forgotten in terms of the minutes or otherwise, but I hope we can have more work done on the head of the approach channel before this plan goes to the town planning board, and that's going to really show some activation of that approach channel. And the final comment I have, Chairman, is we have this fantastic water body sitting between the Kuntung waterfront and the Kaitek runway. Anybody that now comes by over the highway can see that this water is slowly filling up with boats. Now, the Marine Department is foregoing the opportunity to make sure we have public revenue from these boats by having it an anchorage area rather than private mooring. So we're not earning any money. The money is being earned by the Tucker Motorboat Association boys that are renting out the spaces and keep the boats safe at $20,000 to $30,000 a month. But the government is not taking the money for putting in proper mooring areas. But let that be aside. We have no facilities planned on anywhere on the waterfront to cater for this increasing activity in marine users. It is becoming a marina, how we want it or not. And despite the Marine Department, it is becoming a marina. But there is nothing. You can't get on the land. We got glass walls, we got a few landing steps, there's no facilities, there's no clubhouse, there's nothing. And I see in your plan nothing for that. I know we're going to just talk about some dragon boating, which Ian Brownlee has worked hard on and his team at the Water Sports Association. But on the other side of the typhoon shelter, where we have an increasing usage by the various marine users that are desperately looking for space to keep their boats safe in inclement weather, and we have this increasing use, I don't see any facilitation. And I hope that in this, as we go to the town planning board, we're going to get seated facilitation, and that we're going to get our head out of the sand when it comes to the Marine Department, Transport and Housing Bureau and Development Bureau on the active development of this water body for the uses that the community wants, which is to keep your boat safe, not just for rich people who can afford the extortive money being charged by the private sector in keeping the boats there, but the poor people, the regular people, who have no money like $20,000, $30,000 a month, but who can afford a private mooring at $3,000 a month to keep their boats safe. But those are excluded because, again, we're leaving up to triads and tugboat operators to manage that space instead of providing public facilities. So well, I hope we I can sort
you,
that out.
I think you made your point. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Any other comments, members? Please, Freddie. And then Tom, if you like, pull all the answers together in a minute, please. Freddie, thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. the start of all this exercise, this whole thing, is about increasing the plot ratio, increasing GFA in answering our need for more residential units and space like that. That we understand. But by looking at your plans, the residential tower seems very compact. Now, I wonder what assumptions you have made when you do your blocking design, that the tower blocks are so compact that you have almost made it exclusive for a certain type of building that can be built to fulfill the mission of eating up all the GFAs that is assigned to the lot. In a way, you are setting a limit to the flexibility of the tower block design, mm-hmm. if the tower blocks are so compact. So I wonder what flexibility you have allowed for the lot to have other forms of power block design, because right now when I look at it, it feels very compact. You know, nowadays it's in the media, everyone is talking about the mini flats and things like that. Are we looking towards 10, 15 years down the line, we're still building mini flats like that in the runway area? Are we building tower blocks that are literally a hotel layout with single corridor with double loaded flats? I'm just questioning the flexibility you have allowed in your calculation. That would become a limitation to the future design. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Vincent, I think you would like to comment. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman. I think, well, to be fair to all members, I think it would be very difficult for members in the commission to actually comprehend the entire very complicated Kai Tak issues and what has been done in the past. And if you ask members to comment on all these plans presented in within 30 minutes, I think this will be very superficial. Yeah, and I think the entire issue is the increase in density. So it's actually a very very should be a very detailed urban design analysis, and the focus here is actually on density, on height, and on land use. There are changes on the density to increase the density to 6.5. There is an increase in height to provide more relaxation to accommodate that extra density, and an issue to create an interesting height profile, and that in turn relate back to the density by how much volume of residential flat you're going to do, and there's an issue on land use by changing the hotel into residential. And that would actually has a direct implication to the waterfront and the adjacent open space that this Harbourfront Commission should be concerned about. Remember, there is a different acceptability to the waterfront open space concern in relation to the direct adjoining land use. For example, if it is hotel, it would be more embracing to different kind of land use, be it very active, very noisy, like bars, activities, as compared with when the site is a residential. The residential would be less embracing to very active activity. So actually the land use has a direct effect on the waterfront. So I think these are all our area of concern. Now, back to the harbor planning principle, I would like to ask the proponent a very simple and straightforward question. Now, you are varying you are assigning various different density to different sites, which I do not have a strong view on that. My question is, what is the average density that now you are assigning for the runway? And this is actually a reality check that I'm going to ask, because for the planning principle, for the harbor planning principle, it says that you should, the density of site in the harbor front should be lower than that in the inland. So the inland, you think that the inland is maximum 6.5. So I would assume that the average density, I'm not talking about particular site, you know, the average density of the runway area, what is the density, residential density? Now, if you adopt a lower density, which I agree that you may need more site to produce the same number of flats. So I can see that while you in one scheme that you actually take over some site which originally assigned for commercial into residential. So if you are taking more site for producing the same number of flat, then I can assume that your density would be lower than 6.5. So I would like that to be clear and be confirmed. Are you doing a taking more site to produce the same number of flat, and that is you provide lower average port ratio in the harbourfront area as compared with inland. Then that you comply with the planning principle. Second thing is regarding the breach of the bridge line. And I think, well, you have I would not think that we should casually say that the ridge line principle is outdated or rubbish or whatever. I think we should respect that. But there is another harbor planning principle that we allow iconic structure at particular area to provide a more interesting skyline, right? So I would accept that perhaps at some area, like when we did the Kai Tak Fan City, we know that 200 meter iconic tourism node will be above that ridge line, but we all think that is acceptable. So I think along that line you can improve your urban design on that, right? So Chairman, I think, well, I have said enough, and I would say that, well, the proponent, if they follow the harbor planning principles and provide a certain good urban design, I think I would agree to the direction. But I think, well, the product still need to be more detailedly examined rather than just presenting it as it is here.
Okay. All right. KY?
Well, to increase density in order to accommodate more residential GFA, okay, I understand. To keep within certain overall GFA and yet maximize the residential GFA by replacing hotel sites with residential sites, again, I understand. Hotel sites can be built elsewhere. Given now there's also speculation that maybe we do not have that many tourists to stay in that hotel in that location based on the traffic or the projected traffic of the cruiser coming into the cruise terminal. The issue about having more residential GFAs in the maximum density of almost basically overall 6.5 leads to one concern. Maybe we should actually look more carefully into is the peak traffic, because residential site obviously have much more prominent peak than other land use, particularly when it's mixed land use than it's all shell. And this is an area that we understand the road supply is not particularly abundant. First, we already have merged two roads into one, which we all fully support, because then you move the road away from waterfront into the middle of the former runway, which is very good. But we, when we asked that, when during the change, we asked, will the road be able to cope with the traffic? Say that we have done the calculation. It's okay. But now we squeeze more residential GFA into that. Is it still okay? I don't know, because we don't have the figures. But I will suggest or strongly recommend the proponent and also maybe do some more in-depth TIA to actually confirm that it will be done. It will be okay.
Okay. All right, Tom, try and pull all that together if you can.
Yes,
and allocate the questions to whichever team member you think is appropriate, all right?
Yes, okay. I will respond to some general comment first and then leave it to Alan and CEDD Colette to respond to the detailed design and the technical issues. And firstly, about the most important point about the density as raised by Vincent, let us go to this line. And actually, from this line, you can see the plot ratio of individual size. I have to admit that actually, based on the four different schemes, the total residential GFA and the total commercial GFA on the runway are the same. The difference lies only on the distributions. And for the scheme 1A and 1B, we have converted a site 4C, for a CV from hotel to residential, so that we have one more residential size, we can more evenly distribute the plot ratio. So under scheme 1A and 1B, the average residential domestic plot ratio for this residential size is 5.9, which is lower than the 6.5 in the inland areas. But there is a variation among different sites because there are different building height allowed for them. And for the scheme two, we have converted one more residential site to hotel. So we have 12 residential sites in total, and the average domestic plot ratio is 5.4, which is even lower. But you can see that after transferring the GFA to the commercial site, the commercial site will have a higher proposal in the scheme 1A and 1B, and the most even up to 10 in the option scheme 2. So these are the facts. We are trying to keep the residential size proposal to below that of the inland area so that we can comply with the harbor planning principle. This is one of our major considerations. For the tall building and the ridge line, let me bring you to this slide. As Chairman said, study the possibility of more taller and landmark building? I think we have something to observe, as pointed by Vincent. There is a established urban design principle of the ridge line. The principle is not unbreachable. It can be beached, but there should be good reasons. Actually, in the harbor planning guideline and the urban design guideline, they are mentioned there along the waterfront, there can be some iconic or landmark building to give a punctuation effect to the city skyline. But we have noted that the building has to be at an appropriate locations, and we should consider the function and the design. And actually, in Kai Tak, we have already designed a landmark building at the tourism node with the maximum possible building height of about 200 meters. Actually, in our urban design concept, you can see this one. The original urban design principle is that we have one iconic building in the inland. This is this one, the 200-meter commercial landmark building here, and at the southern part we have another the tourism node, and we do think that if we want any tall or landmark building between the ridge line has to be justified by its function and design and its relationship with other buildings. So In our option two, we only come up with one taller building.
But Tom, can you just go back to can you just go back to where you were with the dotted line, showing where the ridge line is?
Okay, so. Oh, sorry.
The one you had up.
This one?
No, you're not, that one. You are nowhere near the dotted line.
Oh,
that's
sorry,
my point.
Sorry.
No, leave it. That's my point. That you're not even edging the dotted line, so there is scope for further height increase without even jeopardizing the ridge line.
Oh, you mean this one?
No.
Sorry.
Okay, perhaps I can just jump in there. Yes, there, prima facie, there appears to be scope to do it. But in undertaking this planning and architectural exercise, we've had to pay attention to the building guidelines, overshadowing, and so on. So I have to be very careful we're not contravening current practice notes and guidelines. Now, certainly we could have a look at it to see if it's possible to increase the heights, but I would say we have to be very careful, and you have to be careful at producing buildings that completely overpower the waterfront and the public circulation spaces. So, yes, I think there is scope perhaps for some margin of height, but I wouldn't say it was great given the tightness of these buildings. I deliberately mentioned the average width of each of the sites right at the beginning. We haven't got much to play with, and it's very difficult to meet all the guidelines if we increase the height much more.
Okay, sorry, I butted in. Anyway, Tom, you want to finish your remarks and then?
Yes, okay. About the landmark building, my remark is that we have give considerations to the relevant guideline, and we consider that for option in the scheme two, we have proposed a taller building which can echo with the Schulze note in terms of height. So also, I would lead you to the about the issue about the air ventilation and the open space. Actually, if we compare the three schemes, scheme 1A, 1B, and 2, scheme 1A will perform better in terms of the amount of open space within the individual sites because we have allowed a higher building height for them. So in scheme 1B and scheme 2, there you can see that the building bulk is relatively longer and bigger. So the difference is like that. And also for end ventilation, I have to explain that actually between this site there are also many different pedestrian streets which can perform the air ventilation purposes. And also from this layout, you can see that between the building there are also some separations which can perform visual and air ventilation functions. So, and also on the more general point, a question was asked about what will be the benefit to the community for the increase in the development intensity. And may I lead you to the scheme? Actually, we have proposed an increase in the development intensity for the runway area, but in other part of the Kai Tak development, we have tried to put forward proposal which can echo and enhance the land use proposal and the planning theme of Kai Tak development. Like we have proposed a heritage park in Area 2, and also we have proposed to amend the zoning to allow for a more comprehensive hospital development in Area 3. And also we have made provisions to allow for water sport and water recreation activity in all open space zones. We try to give a balanced considerations to different land use demand and to respond to the request of different sector of the community. And maybe I leave the detailed design issue to Alan first.
Thank you.
Right, very quickly, Mr.
Yeah,
Chairman, because
sure.
I know
Thank
you're
you.
Running out of space. Yeah, I agree with the first speaker who mentioned, yes, it should be for Hong Kong, of course. There are opportunities to event the spaces along the waterfront, and I'll come back to that in addressing Paul's comments. Yes, I think the commercial towers can be really interesting, and in terms of that grade connections, yes, they will be there. They are planned and they are in the transport planning network. They are controlled crossings at grade, but you've also got the opportunity if you don't want to go to the landscape deck, of going up in either a lift or using stairs or ramps to get to the deck and traversing the entire length of the runway if you so wish, or indeed to cross it from north to south. I will say that in answer to the promenade depths are 30 metres deep at the harbour side and 20 metres deep at the other side, the city side. The AVA, this has already been mentioned with Tom to some extent, but you will notice that the scheme that we have presented, the schemes, in fact, that we've presented today are much more permeable than the scheme that was presented to Vincent's group last time. So I'm not worried about the air ventilation. We've already done an assessment in the previous scheme, and it worked. We've made it better. It's got to work. We will be testing it, though, just to make sure that's right. So don't accept my word that necessarily it'll be certainly addressed. Look, a lot more can be done in terms of the open space and the activation. You know, we've had 3 weeks to work on this, and I think we've done a tremendous amount, as Ivan actually acknowledged, just to try and address all the comments. It has to be a great open space, and it has to be done very tastefully. There's a lot of work needs to be done on this, not just by us, but obviously by whoever takes control of it and how it's managed. Very quickly, Paul, trees and planters, no, don't worry, they will be in the ground as well. And our intention, if you look at the if you look at the reference images we showed, what we're trying to do is to create shade and shelter by using trees in a very dense relationship. So I get bosks of trees that will cool pedestrian users and pedestrians as they traverse the promenade. So I promise you, we won't be resorting just to planters. It won't be a satisfactory answer. Okay, please do. There is circulation. When you were talking about the deck, there is circulation across the deck, as I've just explained, in relationship to the first speaker. So there will be good connections there. We can certainly share with you a connectivity drawing on the upper level connections. Kaitak approach channel. Look, I mean, I can't agree with you more in terms of how that should be activated and so on. Provisions for sailing of all sorts, not just Ian Brownlee's particular variety, should be provided for. And yes, I've seen the Kaitak approach channel recently, and I tend to agree with some of your remarks in terms of the moorings that are going on there. I think that is about it there. No, we're not necessarily advocating the change of hotel to residential. There's merits and demerits associated with that. If anything, for a more permeable layout, probably, as Tom's just said, is that probably 1A is perhaps more permeable than any of the layouts that have been produced. So we're not saying that the hotel should go ahead necessarily in terms of increasing its densities. Yes, indeed, of course, there should be iconic towers wherever possible. And as we refine the architecture, certainly we'll be looking at more unique treatments of the architecture as we go on. I think that's all from my side. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Anything from Leon Orange? No? CDD, want to comment?
Yeah, a few response on the engineering issues. For the landscape deck, I recall that we have a workshop with Harbour Fund Commission summer this year, and we committed that there will be additional staircase lift to be provided. So I think that should address the issues on the pedestrian connectivity with the landscape deck and the waterfront. And on the acoustic windows and balcony, Tom, may I have this slide? Yeah. Okay, in the so-called base case, we have a very compact blocking, so that unfortunately, we mentioned the last time that we have to use acoustic window and acoustic balcony, but for the scheme 1A, 1B, and 2, this time we have, because of the increase in building height, we can have some alternative blocking. And there should be opportunity for us to further develop this scheme to see whether we can avoid the use of acoustic balcony or acoustic window as far as possible. And there will be limitation for the landscape deck to extend the noise barrier on the other side of the road, because on on the side of the road facing the current Jisung as open hotel site. There are underground DCS structures that may limit the feasibility of installing noise barrier there. But at other location, we will see whether we can have some alternatives. And for TIA, we have already completed a comprehensive TIA, which confirmed that the role, the capacity is okay. Currently, we are constructing a dual tool link to replace the single tool link, which is currently serving the cruise terminal. The works will be completed in 2019. By that time, the road level in the one-way tip will be significantly improved. And I think that's my response.
Thank you very much. All right. Please.
Mr. Chairman, has the study team responded to the issues on traffic?
Yes, just said he mentioned study being done. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think it seems that we just can't get away from planning for Kai Tak. And we have been involved for so many years. Mr. Chairman, I guess what we are dealing with today is Kai Tak rethink too. I think in the last presentation to the Kai Tak Task Force, the study team has presented the sort of new circumstances on why we need to make adjustment to the Kai Tak plan, and in particular finding more land for housing development. And in the discussion of the task force, I think the attention was attracted to Area 4, which is a one-way area. In increasing the development intensity in there, what the study team had presented to the task force was the base case as shown on the screen. And that particular base case has an average plot ratio of 6.5, basically 6.5 plot ratio for every single site, with slight variations of building height. And I think we have attracted a lot of comments, suggestions to better improve that. And what the study team has done is to come up with a few options for the commission consideration today. And basically what they have done is they bear in mind three very important sort of criteria and considerations which has been covered a little bit earlier on. A is the original Kai Tak development concept, because that particular development concept represents hard work of long period of public consultations to signify a certain degree of public consensus. We should, whatever changes we make to the Kai Tak plan, try to adhere to that particular concept as far as we can. Second important principle is the harbour planning principle and harbour planning guidelines. A third important principle that we have to sort of pay attention to is the Hong Kong Planning Center guidelines, and in particular the urban design guidelines concerning Ridgeline. So whatever changes we make to the scheme, we bear in mind these three very important considerations. In Scheme 1A, what the study team has done is they make use of moving out one of the commercial sites, putting that commercial site GFA into the remaining three commercial sites. That is to say, we have one additional site for residential users. And make use of this opportunity, the study team has tried to sort of provide a scheme, a scenario in front of you here, is with different plot ratio for different sites and different building heights for different sites. And that produced a more interesting skyline for this particular scheme. For Scheme 1B, the study team has made use of moving away two commercial sites, putting all these two commercial sites GFA into the remaining two commercial sites. That produced a high-rise hotel block at the end of the runway. So I guess basically what the study team has done is a series of sort of options, iterations. And the next step is, I think, for this commissions, we would like to have to comment is how we may translate this type of development parameters onto the regulatory regime, such that the particular regulatory regime, i.e. in particular the OCIP restrictions, would provide certainty for development as well as provide sufficient flexibility for the design. And if we if we may have the sort of slides which shows the all four skyline. Members will be able to see from scheme two, we have a high-rise block breaching the ridge line. And I think Alan has reminded us that there is likely to be another high-rise block a little bit further down to be there at the tourism knot. So members should bear in mind that we would have sort of this two high-rise block. Would that be a sort of acceptable design scheme for the revised Kai Tak development? And looking at scheme 1A and 1B, for all the three important considerations, i.e. the original design concept of Kai Tak, harbour planning principle, harbour planning guidelines, and urban design guidelines, it appears to us that scheme 1A and 1B, we can give all three ticks to those three considerations. For scheme 2, I think it's consideration that we have to sort of give on whether we would like to have a scheme like this, to have sort of two high-rise blocks at the end of the runway. It's one consideration we have to give to. And also, scheme two would result in sort of two commercial sites with a plot ratio of about 10. And if all these plot ratio 10 are developed for hotel development, we have a lot number of rooms for hotels in there. And whether the it is sort of viable in the market is a question mark. Even though if we sort of change some of the hotel GFA for office GFA, I think we'll have to ask ourselves the questions on whether the sort of office GFA or office developments with that scale at that particular location of the one way would also be a viable proposition or not. But importantly, it is not the original concept. I think those are the considerations, Mr. Chairman, that we're giving today. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Well, clearly, you know, significant improvement, but I think everyone agrees that there's further work to be done. Help us, Raymond. You want to go to the Town Planning Board in January. What are you going to ask for the Town Planning Board? Are you going to show them these three options and say these have been perused by this commission? We accept that all of them do respond to the harbour planning principles. We think they could be further refined, but so far as our remit is concerned, the team have responded to the challenge. I mean, what are you hoping to achieve in January with the Town Planning Board?
Mr. Chairman, I think earlier the study team has sort of submitted these Kai Tak Rethink to findings to the Town Planning Board. And Town Planning Board noted the findings and agreed that the study team can sort of go to public consultations with the Kai Tak Rethink 2's findings. And what the study team will have to do is that they have to sort of report to the Town Planning Board the results of the consultations. And I think before the study team sort of go back to the Town Planning Board, the government itself will have to sort of consolidate its view. We have to sort of present the public consultations result to the Town Planning Board. We have also have to sort of present the administration of the government sort of views or proposals or recommendations. That sort of wrap up the consultation of the Kai Tak Rethink 2. The next step is following that sort of results of the Kai Tak Rethink 2, the planning department will have to translate that onto amendments to the OZP. And if we can have the Town Planning Board agreement, and that OZP amendment, we have to go through the Town Planning Ordinance process.
Okay.
So that's broadly the procedures.
So, I mean, so far as today is concerned, you're not asking us, and I don't think we would be prepared to make choices. You presented three options. You demonstrated that to varying degrees they satisfy the harbour planning principles. Is that a sufficient response today from us? Vincent, I know you want to say something. No problem. I'm coming back. Yeah.
That will be very, very helpful, and then we definitely will have to sort of take account of the views of the commissions in sort of finalising the proposal. Yeah.
Sorry, but Vincent, yes, sorry. And then I saw Paul.
Thank you, Chairman.
And
Freddie, my focus would be on the two sub-communication. I think, well, this is a very important area of the harbourfront, and I think the community over the past 10 years has spent a lot of time in envisioning this area. And I remember in the very beginning, we talk about having a three-dimensional model for public easy comprehension rather than this kind of diagram, which I think only limited to people who have certain professional knowledge to comprehend. But I think a physical model, like that the one that you put in EKEO, you know, you've got all those two there, and I think you should utilize those two, which were used for communicating with public, because I think we have done a lot of work on design, envisioning, engaging people, having tools to communicate with people so people can understand. So I understand this is a very quick exercise to do something in response to the chief executive need. But I think you should not bypass those fairly valuable tools to effectively communicate with people, rather than just rushing this through the process. So I would demand that you have three-dimensional tools like models to communicate with the public if you have any engagement exercise or presentation to the town planning board or presenting further refinement of the design. Thank you.
Thank you. Freddie and then Paul. Keep your comments to the point, quick please.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. I really do have a great concern on the flexibility issue I mentioned earlier, because just for comparison sake, when you look at Cowland Station, it's plot ratio 8, and it has 40, 50 story towers, huge podium, and that can only eat up so much GFA to meet the plot ratio 8, and this is plot ratio 6.5. You have a tiny podium and you have 18 stories. Now that means you must have made some assumptions to eat up all the GFA. You probably leave very little leeway for the actual design in the future, because the danger is you put this up to town planning board, they came back with a set of approved parameters in figures. And then the next stage developer will have to work according to the figures. They don't work according to this massing model. It's really, really challenging. So I strongly pledge you will test out alternatives based on similar figures and design. That's one thing. Second thing, I asked this question very early on. By increasing the plot ratio on the residential portion, you are actually altering the private and public residential component ratios. Okay, now I don't know whether it is a concern for the government to answer to the public that you are literally increasing the public sector and lowering the private sector. There may be other options you can look into. Certain plots can be, I don't know, private public participation, or you know, things that can make this ratio closer to the original planning intent. I leave this up to you to think about. I don't have an answer for it.
Good point. Paul, please.
Yeah, the dynamism of the option two, and I ignore the breaching of the ridge line. To me, it looks more dynamic than option one on the first three, the base model and 1A and 1B. So I think it's a more dynamic approach in variation in height of the buildings is going to be more interesting for that site, and more gaps between the buildings where people can look through. I think it's going to be more appropriate for the runway. I'm a bit confused on having all the amount of commercial furthest away from the MTR stations. The MTR stations are a Kitec apron, and we're putting all the commercial at the end of the runway. To me, it's going to be odd that we're pushing all the traffic back and forth over the runway. And I just wonder whether that, to me, that doesn't seem to be sensible to do it that way. there might be reasons for doing this, but I don't see the sense. If we want to grow a commercial node in the area, we probably should be closer to the MTR stations where people can walk back and forth all the time. I may have not been clear, but if there's a public space at the deck over the roads, should that be connected with a public space at podium level in the private properties around it, in the properties around it, and then make sure that that works as one whole integrated area? And I hope we can set that out in the details of the planning. And then, Chairman, if we're going to go, I still haven't heard how we're going to activate the approach channel at the head. And I still haven't heard any plans, and I keep repeating this, so I keep repeating it again. Can we please have, in the proposals that you're going to put forward and in the 3D model that Vincent is urging for, a real detailing of how this approach, and it's going to be an exciting area for people to be, and with great detail, okay, and not just left to speculation of what the LCSD may do at the end of the day. Those are my points.
All right, well, look, we're going to have to draw a line. Useful discussion. Obviously, we need to record, obviously, this discussion carefully. So, Christine, I think a very detailed note, which I want to see and endorse before it goes to Town Planning Board, recording what we were said. There's obviously more work to be done. When are you hoping to go to the Town Planning Board?
I think we are programming in January.
Is there any way, not necessarily a formal meeting of the Commission, but you know, from time to time we do meet informally with proponents and teams, could we see the work that's been done between now and the Town Planning Board? That would be helpful, in a dialogue fashion, not in a critical fashion, but in a dialogue fashion. I think we'd all benefit from seeing what you're going to submit and feel more comfortable. If we could have a working session, Raymond? Before you go to Town Planning Board?
Chairman, I think, certainly. I think we have working sessions with the Halfland Commission all the time. Yeah.
Okay. So a detailed note, carefully worded note, recording everything, and a working session before they go to the Town Planning Board. Members happy? All right. Thank you very much. Thank you.